The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why my Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Welcome to the Ghost Bunny Podcast. I'm your host, Bridget Marquardt, with a brand new episode for you. And today we are at the historic and haunted Kellogg House in Santa Ana, California. This is considered the Heritage Museum.
Yeah, the Heritage Museum of Orange County.
And it's a working museum during the day and haunted tours at night. And before we get started, I would like to thank Ernie from Haunted Orange County. Without him, we wouldn't be here today. He set this all up, so thank you very much, Ernie. And if you guys want to tour properties like this, the Kellogg House, and he has a whole bunch of other ones on there too, go to hauntedorangecounty.com and get your tickets there. So today my guest is a docent and a ghost host from Haunted Orange County, Darcy Staniforth. Yeah. Darcy, thank you so much for doing the podcast today.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here with you.
I'm very excited to be here. When I first saw this place online, I was like, oh, I have to go there. Have to. So I'm going to read your bio here. Darcy Staniforth is an academic, writer, performer, and paranormal investigator. She has been interested in the paranormal since she was very young, and that interest has carried into both her personal and professional life. Darcy holds a BA and an MA in American Studies, and in addition to the paranormal, her research areas include race and ethnicity, gender and sexuality, ideals and institutions, and death, dying, and grief in American culture. Darcy is a podcaster, comedian, writer, and amateur magician. As is a ghost host for the Haunted OC. She currently resides in a haunted house in Southern California. And Darcy, thank you for doing the show today. I wanted to set a couple things up before we get started. So, as we said, this house is very haunted, but we have some things set up behind us. We have a flashlight and a bell. The bell is motion sensored, so only if something goes near it. So if you hear the bell go off.
It's actually magnetic.
Oh, so the magnetic
one. Even if you
get
close to it, it won't go off. There has to be a magnetic shift.
Okay, so if you hear the bell going off, there's clearly no one back there behind us. And then we also have a flashlight set up. Mm-hmm. So if you guys don't know how the flashlights work, we have it set so that the top part is loosened. And then if anything comes by, it can slowly, easily manipulate it to turn it on.
Has to turn on.
Or turn it off.
Even if we get close to it, it's not going to go on. Like,
right.
I was just standing over there, it won't go on. So, and around, outside of what you all can't see too, we've got set up around the house. Thank you to Martin from Golden State Paranormal for bringing equipment today, right? We have got two music boxes set up. So if you all hear any like actual music box noise going, it means something has interacted with it. And we also have a couple REM pods set up on the stairs and one in the office. So we'll keep an ear for those, and you all should keep an ear for that too.
Yes, so if you guys hear any of those things going off, you know what's happening around here. So we're going to be getting a whole house tour after this. So tune in for that. That'll be on the YouTube. I'm really excited to get that whole tour. But first, we're going to talk about this. I love that you have a master's degree.
Thank you.
In American Studies, but you're also a podcaster, comedian, writer, and amateur magician.
Yes.
And I'm curious, does being a magician help with the paranormal at all?
I think being a magician does help with the paranormal because I have a different way of looking at things, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things that I should point out, especially since we have things set up, is like the Kellogg's not a rigged attraction. Like, we're not a rigged house. Like, this is a historic house. And so I think I'm always looking for like, what are people doing? And granted, you can have amazing enhanced experiences mm-hmm. through effects and things like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to, you know, be disparaging of that at all. But I think also too, it helps you kind of pull apart when people are like, oh, this is, look at what's really happening. And I'm like, I know how you're doing that. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't want to necessarily outwardly call someone out, but mm-hmm. it's even as someone who's had a lot of experiences, and I have experiences in this house all the time, it's really about like have that skeptical eye and be aware that people might be trying to fool you.
Right.
So I think that's where it helps in those things. But also I think being, I'm open to joy and whimsy. Oh, our flashlight just went on. Sorry, got that out of my eye.
Yes.
And I think too, like the more open you are to things, the more you have the opportunity to, you know, maybe see something or hear something that you didn't expect. And I think that's one of the things that I love about magic. Like people get really, I use spicy as like grumpy. People get really spicy about magicians. And I'm like, I don't think you've seen the right magicians because it can be so much full of wonder. Like as my friend Ryan says, it's more fun to believe.
Right.
So why not?
Yeah. I just feel like magicians have a different way of looking at things and a different perspective on things because they kind of see the other side of it. You see what people see here, but you also see like how it's made in the back,
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I just feel like it gives you a whole different perception when you're in a place like this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm always keeping an eye and trying to also debunk, right?
Yeah.
We try and be really good investigators here as much as ghost hosts and our guests. Something happens, I'm going to spend time after my tour trying to replicate that because I don't want to perpetuate stories that aren't real.
Right. So I want to go back. I always like to find out what everyone's history is and everything. Tell me what was when your love for the paranormal began. Like what was that first thing that happened and made you say, okay, that was paranormal?
Sure. So I think it wasn't an experience as much as a family ghost story.
Okay.
And so I knew that from very young. My mother and father, when they were first together, went to England because my dad was English. He came from Yorkshire and was born and raised in a town called Sheffield. And so they went back to visit England. My mother had this very elegant dream. She was like, I want to sleep in a four-poster bed. Like, I want to have this like kind of castle-y experience. Mm-hmm. So my dad found this converted space that was now like a hotel so she could have that experience. And so they're there and it's in the middle of the night. They've had some fun that evening with cocktails and other adult things. And they go to bed. And my dad wakes up and he's like, can't you hear that, Shelley? Like, wake up. And she's like, what are you talking about, Alan? Like, I did not know what you're talking about. And he's like, can't you hear that? Can't you hear that? And she's like, no, I can't hear anything. So he's like, we have to sleep with the lights on. She's like, all right, whatever. She goes back to sleep. My dad is awake all night. And what he was hearing was he was hearing two people fighting, like a man and a woman, like in a deep argument. And he was like, oh, these people next door to us are just, you know, going crazy. So the next morning they go to check out and they mention to the gentleman at the front desk, like, what was all the ruckus last night? And the gentleman at the front desk says, oh, they've come early. And I said, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Says, normally the spirits don't show up till spring. And they were there like in the fall. Well, they've come early this year. And what it turned out and why we think they showed up is because the man that used to own the manor, his name was Staniforth. And he had had an affair with the maid. She had gotten pregnant. When she confronted him on it, he murdered her and fed her to the pigs. And so it's this spirit, this haunting that happens, and it seemed to have shown up early because of because of the Staniforth connection.
And they are not related? It just...
Tied, it could be somewhere down the line.
Wow.
But Staniforth is a slightly more common name in England.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was like the first, like, as a child, like, oh, we have a family ghost story.
Yeah.
But, you know, outside of that ghost story, things, thank you so much.
I love it.
Right?
So active.
Things like, you know, In Search of Ripley's Believe It or Not with Jack Palance, Unsolved Mysteries coming, right?
Love.
Robert Stack, hello.
Because,
you know, as a kid, I was like, I can help, you know?
Right.
Things like
yeah.
that. And I was also the kid that would go into the library and like any book on the paranormal, mm-hmm. I would check out and want to read. And I always wanted to know. So I was just always really curious about it. And so as an adult now, I have the academic world, but I also get to do fun, spooky stuff in the academic world too.
Yeah. yeah. What other locations have you investigated? Like some big standout ones.
So probably the biggest standout that I just came back from, thank you so much, was got a chance, Golden State invited me along to come to Bobby Mackey's Music World.
That's amazing.
And I literally just came back from that. And that place, one, that place is huge, huge. And there was only three of us on the investigation that night. We had so many people we had invited, like, come with us, and just people couldn't make it.
Oh,
and
my
so I'm
gosh.
Like, I guess we're the three who are meant to be here, right? And so even from the outside of that building, before we went in, there was like an electricity coming off of it. Like there was a vibe,
yeah.
I call it.
And it's closed down now,
closed
right?
Closed down. It's been shut for 3 months. The inside would make you think it's been shut for 3 years because it's rough in there. So we got to investigate there for 5 hours.
Wow.
Which was really amazing.
Yeah.
And I think I'm still kind of processing how we felt in there and just some of the activities that we got in there, which was fantastic. I had a chance to go on a group investigation at the Valley Camp Museum at Michigan Paracon last year,
yes.
which we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then just some, I haven't gotten yet to hit a lot of the big ones because I'm here. Thank you so much. I'm here at the Kellogg so much
yeah.
that like, and you know, as I'm sure you know, when you're in the paranormal, like everyone's working on something at any time. So, but I've investigated, you know, private homes, other historical spaces.
Yeah.
So people can invite me along and I'm happy to go.
Yes.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You said that your personal home is haunted.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about it?
So we live in a house from 1920. It's a single-story Spanish style. Based on the research that I've done, it looks like we're only the third long-term owner. Because the house was built in 1920, and there was a gentleman that lived in the house from... Flashlight just went on.
I thought.
Lived in there from like the 1960s until the 90s. And so we think there was the first family, him, flippers bought it, and then my husband got it.
Wow.
So we think only third long-term owners. The gentleman that lived there from the 60s through the 90s, his name was Frank Mike, and he died in that house. And I'm not making this up for the sake of the podcast, I promise you, Bridget. He died on Halloween.
Wow.
Yeah. And so he passed away in the house of cardiac issues. Could have been a heart attack.
Yeah.
We don't think they found him immediately.
Oh.
So I think he shows up. So some of the things that happen is, and like the house is small, it has a galley kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that cooks in the kitchen travels through my office and then you can smell it in the bedroom. And one of the things that shows up a lot is the smell of blueberry muffins baking.
Oh.
But at like 3 a.m. And I have checked with the neighbors, like tried to, again, debunking everything, not them. So that has happened. Doors have opened. And then Frank likes to mess with some of the electronics in the house. So we have those electronic, like battery operated candles.
Yeah.
He likes to turn those on at different times and different ones too, because they're all throughout the house. When those die, Like if I don't know the battery's dead on them, he'll turn on the TV.
Okay.
So that will happen. And for a while, a couple of the candles had like, I just replaced the batteries like only a few months before, and not that the batteries are gonna last forever, but the batteries exploded in them. The flashlight's back on. The batteries had exploded in them.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, the house feels a little odd. So I went, got rid of those, fixed them, and then he started playing with them again. And so I have worked with the Tustin Historical Society, Donna over there, who's just been amazing, and gotten to do some more research on Frank, because Frank wasn't married. He didn't have any children. In his obituary, it just says he's survived by like siblings. That's it. And so I've tried to do as much research as I can on him to kind of keep him alive. Mm-hmm. And because nothing's malicious, I just am like, you can, you know, you can stay in the house. Like, it's okay. And I talk to him and say like, hi, Frank, is that you? Or it could also be like other spirits too. I don't know, but it seems to be more consistently with him. And so I don't know if it's one of those things where we're ghosts to him, whereas he's a ghost to us.
Right.
But it doesn't seem to be residual, because it isn't, there's no set of circumstances that seems to trigger it. It's just, oh, candle turned on. Or sometimes if there's something emotional going in the house, it's like, oh, that candle popped on. So yeah, Frank Mike hanging out in our house.
I love the idea too that we could be ghosts to them. Like they are seeing the future. Like they're still living their lives there and they see us as future and we're seeing
like,
them.
Like what are you, can you get out of my space?
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard some great stories like that. And that whole theory and idea really sticks with me for some reason.
Yeah, like, I think that's fascinating, that kind of interdimensional idea. So he, as long as he's happy there, I don't mind sharing a space with him. He doesn't take up very much space.
Yeah. And how long have you been doing stuff with Haunted Orange County?
So I started with Haunted Orange County in 2022, right after we came down the heavy part of the lockdown. But I had reached out because I really loving the paranormal and loving history. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be fun to start being a ghost host for a company that did those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And Haunted Orange County has just such a great reputation for that.
Yeah.
And really trying to provide good history and do it well. And so I reached out to Ernie, and Ernie being the welcoming person is like, come join us for dinner. Like, let's meet you. And so we had a great, it was like an all company dinner and we had a great time. And you know, a little back and forth, and it was like, do you want the Kellogg? And I'm like, sure. But I didn't come in saying like, oh, I've got to have the Kellogg. I was open to doing anything.
Yeah.
But again, certain things seem to tie me here, so.
And do you do any other locations or just this one?
So right now I'm just doing this one, but the next one that I will be picking up for us, it's a tour we already have, which is the Downtown Santa Ana tour, but I will be also picking up that tour as well. And there's a possibility of maybe a third location. But we're not quite sure.
Okay.
But I mean, I love spending time here.
Yeah. Well, this place is amazing. So let's get, oh, you think so too.
Thank you so much. Helen, is that you? Affirming Bridget? Maybe. Okay.
So let's get into the Kellogg house.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with the cereal family.
No. This is Kellogg of gardening fame is how I can connect it in modern. So folks know the striped garden bags for like soil and fertilizer that has a little king on them that says get growing with Kellogg. That's this family.
Okay.
They did not start in gardening, but it is, yes, it's not cereal. That is a whole nother Kellogg with some other stories.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the house. When was it built?
Yeah. So the house was built in 1898 by Hiram Clay Kellogg, designed and built by Hiram Clay Kellogg as a wedding gift to his second wife, Helen Kellogg. And this house very much has Hiram's design eye all over it. And as we tour through, you'll see how much Hiram loved sailing in ships, Bridget. And I can't state this enough based on some of the design choices that he made with the house.
Yeah.
The dining room has a connection to sailing in ships. The staircase has a connection to sailing in ships. I think if he was not a civil engineer, he would have been a captain on a ship somewhere. And so while Hiram's designs are everywhere. We truly believe that this is Helen's house. And so as we come into the house, we say hello to Helen. And I introduced Helen to you and you to Helen when we came in. And when we leave, we say goodbye to Helen. And that's not a bit we do. It's not like, oh, everyone say hello to Helen, because Helen will very much make it known if people aren't good guests in her house. I've seen it both on investigations as well as we've heard about it on tours as well. My tour group seemed to be very good because I stress that a lot.
Yeah.
And just up from us and is a picture of Helen, who kind of overlooks us as the lady of the house. And Helen also passed away in this house.
Right.
She outlived Hiram by over 40 years. She even remarried, outlived that husband.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And converted the first floor office that was Hiram's public office into a bedroom later in life because she wasn't able to go up the stairs. And so in 1963, at the age of 93, we know she passed in the house.
Very interesting. Did he have it? He just had it built. He did not build it himself.
I think he was very much part of it. Like, I would not be surprised if he had a hand in some things.
Yeah.
But that he redesigned this house twice. Once more traditionally, because this is known as a Queen Anne Victorian with neoclassical elements. Sometimes people call it a neoclassical Victorian. That's not it. My brother was very clear on that. My brother's a home builder, so he's like, it's a Queen Anne Victorian with neoclassical elements. But he designed it one way, and then, thank you so much, and the flashlight went on. He designed it one way, and then because of a connection to ships, which would be the ship's mast that this house is built around, he redesigned the entire house. And so even if he wasn't actually completely hands-on, he was hands-on with this house.
Yeah.
Because again, it's like, oh, that's a Hiram thing. That's a Hiram thing.
Yeah. Well, you already answered my next question, because I was going to ask what type of architecture. How many bedrooms and bathrooms?
So interesting fact about the bathrooms is that this house had the first indoor bathroom in all of Santa Ana. It has two bathrooms. One is upstairs. One is downstairs. The downstairs one that's just behind the kitchen was not originally considered an indoor bathroom. It was actually facing the outside where help or other folks could use that. It ended up eventually becoming more of an indoor bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
But first indoor bathroom in all of Santa Ana.
Wow.
As well as the first house in Santa Ana with electricity. So as we look around, you'll see some lighting fixtures that face down. Those would have been original electricity. Any of the lighting fixtures you see facing up on the walls would have still been gas because they needed to have a backup.
Uh-huh.
And then also the house had what we would think of like as air conditioning, but it was like a forced air system to keep the house cool and moving. So a lot of first, very modern for a house in 1858, because to go back to bathroom facts for a moment, most places in the United States did not have indoor plumbing until the 1930s.
Oh, wow.
If you were in a rural part of the United States, it was the 1950s. And then I've had folks on my tour who've told me about relatives in rural like Texas and things like that that didn't have indoor plumbing until the 60s.
Whoa.
Yeah. So this to have two bathrooms in 1898 was a huge deal.
Definitely.
Bedroom wise, we have four bedrooms. We will see three of them because one of the bedrooms is what is our archives, and my conservator would have a fit if I trumped people in there. But three bedrooms for all of the children, including the daughter from Hiram's first marriage.
Okay.
And then their primary bedroom, which is actually on the plan split into two halves, one being the boudoir and then one being the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a much larger space. But two out of the three children's rooms are actually pretty big for children's rooms of that time.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And this is not the original location of the house, right? It was moved here?
Yeah, it was moved here from not too far away, though. Here at the Heritage Grounds, this has been here since the 80s. It was just up the street in Santa Ana at the corner of Orange and Walnut. So not too far from here. But again, it was in that location from its building until the 80s. So almost 100 years in the same location, 90 yeah. plus years in the same location.
Why did they move it?
Because the school district bought it.
Oh,
so the
okay.
Heritage Museum is on land that's leased by the Santa Ana School District. And so they bought the house and moved it here. We also have another house on the property known as the Mag Farm House, also not in its original location. It was in a different part of Santa Ana that is land that's next to the Santa Ana and Fairhaven cemeteries. Oh. And the Mag and two of its buildings make up our gift shop and our museum offices, our carriage house.
And so Helen died in this house, but
yes.
he did not.
He did not. Hiram died on Christmas Eve, Eve of 1921, and it was from complications from ulcer surgery. Mm. He was at what they called at the time Anaheim Sanatorium, which was like their hospital and recuperation place. And by all accounts, the morning he passed, he was in good spirits. They thought he was going to make a full recovery. And then he passed away. Mm. I don't know about you. I don't want ulcer surgery now, much less in 1921.
Right.
So who knows if there could have been other contributing factors to that. But he was only in his mid-60s when he passed. But we have reason to believe, based on some investigation stuff we've done here, that Hiram may also still be here with us. But he did not die in the house.
You know what's interesting about you saying that he was in good spirits that day? And so I've heard so many stories like that where, and I used to work in a cardiology office for like 7.5 years, and people would come in and be like, I just don't understand what happened. Like, I went to visit him in the hospital and he was totally fine. He was sitting up. I thought he was getting better. I was going to take him home that day. And then I got the call that he died. And it just seems to happen to so many people. Like, you get this last wind.
Yeah. It's like, I've heard hospice nurses call it like the ramp up. Or I talked to one recently who was like, it's the last hurrah. Like, they're almost gaining the energy to cross over.
Yeah.
And so, and I've talked with other, because of the work that I do around death, dying, and grief, I've talked to a lot of folks who've lost people, and it's that same thing. They were doing so good. We thought they were making a turn. And I was like, oh, they didn't explain to you that sometimes things can ramp up. I think they were just ramping up to cross over. Thank you so much.
And the flashlight. Yeah, we got them both going. And then this was a Tiffany Glass factory for a little while.
Yeah, it after Helen passed away, it became a Tiffany Glass factory for a while. And it also became apartments for a while before the school bought it. Are you just confirming my facts? Fantastic.
Well, because right? it was apartments, that means a lot of people were probably in and yeah. out of here. So there could be other people here.
Absolutely. And the other thing, too, is that the grounds we're on are indigenous grounds. And so the land here is swampland, actually, traditionally. That's why the Kellogg no longer has a basement, because you can't really build a basement in a swamp. But we know that this was the land of the Tongva people.
Uh-huh.
And we even have a photo from one of our events that it seems it might be an indigenous spirit coming through. And so between apartments, also the fact that 80 to 90% of the stuff in the house is donated antiques. Like sometimes
yeah.
when you bring stuff in, you bring stuff in.
Yeah.
So our spirits could come from all over the place. Because Helen and Hiram, who we feel pretty confidently are here, but we also have like, we believe some child spirits, and none of the Kellogg children died early, so we know it's not them.
Mm-hmm.
We also have some residual hauntings here that we don't know, so it's always we're always trying to like give us a little more. And we get some names and things sometimes when I'm doing investigations, but we don't have any knowledge, you know, of those folks, so we're just trying to respect what they do give us.
None of the kids would still be alive, would they?
No. They have passed on. The original family members have passed on, but the Kellogg family now, which we're now to the sixth generation of H.C. Kellogg's, because the firstborn male is named Hiram Clay Kellogg. Through the fifth, the sixth is actually an H.C. Kellogg. But the Kellogg family, Kathy Kellogg, who is the head of Kellogg Gardening, has been on the tour and is involved with the museum. And they love that we're doing this here and talking about the house and kind of keeping the family those aspects of the family alive.
Yeah. I was just curious because it could still possibly be one of the kids that are here. Like, there might have been like a very fond memories for them.
Totally.
And still wanting to be a part of it.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. You just never know. So we know Helen haunts the house. I think that's who's talking to us right now.
It could be Helen. It could be Hiram.
Yeah.
We've also had some other spirits, like another male spirit in here that seems to be like an older male. But also we've had, one of the young spirits we think is here is named Nicholas. And Nicholas usually is upstairs on the stairs and then in the children's room. But he seems to sometimes come down here with us when we're investigating.
Okay.
So it could be him playing with us. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll have to see if some of the other equipment goes off too.
Well, the stairs are quiet. I haven't heard anything from
REM pods. Yeah, we haven't heard a REM pod or anything from the stairs, but we'll see how things happen as we're walking around too.
You know what else is interesting too? I was going to say, when you say hi to her and goodbye to her and everything, they do that at the Winchester house too. They say, hello, Sarah. Goodbye, Sarah.
Yeah, I've been to the Winchester. I haven't gotten a chance to investigate the Winchester, but I did when I was there. I was like,
I know, because it's not part of the regular tour, really.
It's not. And one of the stories that one of the docents at that time told me said, we had shut off everything in the house, like everything was dark, and we looked back up and all the lights were on. And I was like, how was that? And they're like, we decided to go.
That's a lot of lights.
It's a lot of lights. It's a lot of lights.
Oh my gosh. So let's talk about some of the different hauntings.
Yeah.
What would you say is the most prevalent thing that happens here? Like, if somebody had never been here, like me, what would you say is probably the thing that that would happen first or the most?
So I think the thing people tell me about experiencing the most, and it's hard because it's not something tangible you can capture the evidence on, is just the feeling in the house. This house can have a really electric feeling, like where you just come in and you're like, oh, something's going on here.
Yeah.
And you know, for me, if I'm working in like a ghost host manner and not an investigation, it's really like, okay, we're getting into business and we're getting people around. Some of the more common things that people have told me on tours is hearing giggling. So we think that might be tied to the little ones. We've also, it's been more common lately, but footsteps upstairs. Mm. I had a tour here just at the end of May, and we were all in this front parlor. I knew where everyone was. I knew where my staff was. Like, I have eyes on everyone. And we're standing here, and I'm getting ready to start the tour, and up above us just sounds like someone is walking around. Like, no, not like, oh, that's the house settling, like, heavy footsteps.
Yeah.
So footsteps, and a lot of the staff will tell you, like, oh, we hear footsteps a lot. The grandfather clock that is behind us, it works, but we don't keep it wound because people are in and out so much. That will start itself up a lot. So those are some of the more common things. I have had guests be touched or like sweatshirts tugged on or like hair played with. That has happened, and I usually see it because suddenly I see a look on a tour, and I'm like, oh, what's happening there? And they're like, I felt someone touch me, and no one's behind me. So those are some of the, like, more common things. Thank you.
Tell me about the residual haunting.
So the residual haunting actually happens in the parlor right behind us. So we're in the front parlor right now. This is the rear parlor. The front parlor.
That's where I was going to go with this.
Yes.
This is the living room.
This is the living room, right? So, you know, in our homes,
yes,
we have a living room.
Yes.
And most people go like, oh, they call it a living room because we live in it. No, it's a little darker than that.
Yeah.
In Victorian times, because death was so much a part of life, right? If you had a home that had a front parlor and a rear parlor, you would lay out the dead in the rear parlor and the living would stay in the front parlor. So we are in the living room right now, the front parlor. In the rear parlor here, which technically was Hiram's billiard room and man cave, really, like on the plans it says billiard room. But there has been a residual haunting of a tall man with a beard in a brown three-piece suit wearing a hat. And it came about right after we brought some new clothing in, including a hat.
Oh.
New old clothing.
Yeah.
And so he will cross from one side of the rear parlor to the other. He doesn't interact with anyone. He just walks through like, I'm taking my stroll. Now, different museum folks have seen the man in the hat, like the hat, like not the hat man, but like the man in the hat. Our former director, Jamie, has a beautiful bloodhound named Orville Sue. And he would come on the grounds a lot and he is alerted to him. But I think one of the most just fascinating stories is that we have a ton of events here on the grounds at the museum. And so people were setting up for an event one day and our groundskeeper was going around telling people like, hey, you can be out here, but please no one go in the house. It's off limits. People were like, great. And so he was making another round later and a gentleman pulled him aside and said, hey, I just want to let you know there's a man in a suit walking around in that room in there. You might want to tell him he's not allowed in there.
Oh,
and our
gosh.
Groundskeeper was like, get right on that.
Yeah.
So people even outside the house have seen him inside the house.
Wow.
But again, he just goes about his business.
Yeah.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it. That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
Tell me about the haunted photo.
It's right behind us. Well, it's behind us right there.
Okay.
So I will describe to y'all because we'll see it more on the tour. So the haunted photo, we know who's in it, but it's an original photo. Of all the photos on the piano, that's the only original photo. And what the photo is the house in its original location. Helen is in that photo. And the four children, the children between Hiram and Helen are in that photo. And that photo would normally sit in the corner and we used to have a lamp back there. And it was during public hours, it was a little quiet, people weren't coming in. So some of the museum staff decided they want to do some investigations. And so one of the things that they brought in was an EMF detector. And for those who might not know, electromagnetic field detector, that senses different anomalies with electricity. And we see it again on a lot of paranormal shows where people go, this is bad wiring, right?
Yeah.
So they had it in the corner next to the lamp and they got a really high reading. But they were really aware like, well, this is next to a lamp.
Right.
So we gotta be aware. So they started moving the photo around to different parts of the front parlor and the rear parlor. And they kept getting really high readings off of it. And then they went back into the corner without the photo there, and the reading was totally normal.
Hmm.
I've had a couple different folks with investigation equipment on the tour that have also got higher readings. So we don't quite know what it is about that photo that wants to tell us more of a story, but that is why we call it the haunted photo.
Yeah. So you have a master's degree in American studies and your research area includes death, dying, and grief in American culture.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on what hauntings are?
Oh my God.
Oh.
I mean, it continues to change.
Yeah.
Like all the time. Based on both personal experiences and then like listening to folks talk about their experiences, but like new theories coming up. And I think hauntings can come out of like a lot of different things, right? Because, you know, being someone who's aware of like, well, I talk about a residual haunting all the time. I also am fascinated by the theory that someplace could not be haunted, but then by the energy we bring in, we end up inadvertently haunting it, like an egregore. You know, and I think really rudimentarily, like I used to think, oh, hauntings are sad because people are trapped. Like I used to really be in that. But I think that there are some people like, I don't think Helen wants to leave. Like I think Helen likes Helen's house and she wants to be here.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like the more, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, the more we get into this world, the less I have concrete feelings about, because it's just like, oh, and then this happened and this happened. I definitely know though, like that death, I feel like death and hauntings are very connected, because we don't, if we're talking about ghosts, then we're talking about death in some way, right? Like, because we don't get ghosts without somebody dying.
Right.
So I don't fully know. I wish I had like this answer, but I can't be one of those folks because I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting because I also, you know, I like to think of it as being our family, our friends, our people that, you know, used to live here or whatever that is doing it. And that's a very romantic, I feel like, way of thinking of it to me, if romantic's even the right word. But I like it that way. But then I used to hear all these different things of what else it could be, even from aliens to, you know, all kinds of stuff. And it's like, oh, wait, maybe this is not what I think it is.
Yeah, I just watched a panel the other night at the Philosophical Research Society, and it was talking about like non-human intelligence. And they were like, is an alien a ghost? Is Bigfoot an alien? Like all of these, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many things and so many different theories.
There really is. It seems like the way we handle death, dying, and grief in American culture has changed over the years. So let's talk a little bit what we're wearing and what the Victorians did to kind of embrace it. Because I feel like the Victorians really embraced it.
Victorians were all about death. So Victorians had, you know, we get the idea of a good death from the Victorian culture. And so you and I are both in what would be considered full Victorian mourning. Talk a little bit about some of the gendered ideas around mourning in Victorian times. So as women, if a significantly close relative died, husband, child, sibling, parent died, we would be in full Victorian mourning. So that is all black. Mm-hmm. I'm cheating a little bit because I have my accessories on, but no accessories and no color for 2 years.
Whoa.
Full 2 years. Okay. We would also dress the house. We would probably put crepe on the windows to cover the windows and the mirrors, because Victorians felt that if spirits went towards shiny objects, they would get confused and lost. You would often stop a clock at the time of death. You would hang a wreath on the door to let people know like you were home in mourning. Right. So, and you would receive guests, but they would know that you're in mourning. And as a woman, we would not really be back out at like societal functions. After those 2 years are up, we would go into what was called half mourning, lasts about 9 months. We would be able to start to bring in a little bit of color. And I'm talking about like a dark gray, a dark purple, maybe a little white, but we're still primarily in black. And then the last stage of mourning could last about 3 to 6 months, where again, more colors coming in, but still primarily black. Here's the rub though. If, let's say you and I are like, we are mourning our father and we are 3 days away from this almost 3 year period of mourning, and our mother passes away.
Oh God.
It starts all over again. So there was a lot of women in Victorian times that spent the entire rest of their lives in some stage of mourning.
Yeah.
And again, we have to remember too that Victorians that could honor those were more like that middle to upper class in those things. But they honor that. Gentlemen would wear like a dark suit and a hat band or an armband. They were back out in the public pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But again, that's the separation of spheres, like the public sphere versus the private sphere. And you know, if you were a gentleman who lost their wife, you certainly weren't sitting around caring for the children yourself. We were not in a time of like stay-at-home fathers. So they might even be looking to have another woman help take care of the children. Mm-hmm. And so those kinds of things. But then also the Victorians were very sentimental, right? Because photography is new during that time. It is starts out very timely, gets a little faster, but it's also really, really expensive. Mm-hmm. So in the time, in those late 1800s, to have a family photo done then would have been about $900.
Whoa.
And that, like, we would think of that as, like, that's a lot for now,
yeah.
much less in Victorian times. So you didn't have a lot of photography because it was costly. And so this is where we also see the rise of, postmortem photography.
Yeah.
And we see them taking photos of their loved ones, their children, because that might be the only photo they have of them. But this is also where we see the rise of mourning jewelry, like the brooch that I'm wearing on my neck. So this brooch is woven hair set under glass, surrounded by gold and enamel. And then inscribed on the back, it says Aunt Anne, March 5th, 1858. So this was done to commemorate Aunt Anne. But other things, like what's behind us in the box, is we have hair wreaths, mm-hmm. right? We also have another one in the house. And then sometimes to commemorate children, you would have Victorian mourning dolls as well. So these memento mori would help keep folks alive, mm-hmm. but the Victorians were also very particular about making sure, again, you had that good death. And one of the big things that interrupts the Victorian ideal of a good death is the Civil War. So from 1861 to 1865, we have the first major war in the United States, between the United States, and all of these men, brothers, uncles, husbands, fathers, are all getting pulled into service, and we don't actually have a way to track them all.
Right.
Right? We think of the military now. It's like dog tags and IDs and all this. This is the first time. Mm-hmm. And so a funerary art comes about during that time, and that's embalming. And so if you could, first of all, find your loved one who had died in battle and then afford to have them embalmed and shipped back, then you could give them that proper burial. And embalming is still used today. Mm-hmm. It is, though, one of the things in the United States that is an opt-out process. In many other parts of the world, either embalming is not used or it's an opt-in. But in the United States, unless it's a very specific circumstance, like having to take someone across state lines, for example, you do not have to embalm a body. They will try and make you purchase it.
Yeah.
But you can say, I do not want this body embalmed. And so it's one of those carryovers. But they didn't have these long lifespans, right? And we also saw in the more traditional Victorian times when we had houses like this with the front and the rear parlor, cemeteries were also in the neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. So I was just at the historic Yorba Cemetery the other night in Yorba Linda. And that is now, because it's historic, an entire condo complex is built around that, right? Like there's a condo complex and then this historic cemetery. Yeah. Anaheim Cemetery, which is a cemetery for the community, is in the middle of a neighborhood. As we got more urban and went into more cities and didn't have spaces like this, that is when death started getting moved out. And why so many of our cemeteries, especially more modern ones, are on the outskirts of town.
Right.
And so we have become a really death avoidant and grief avoidant culture.
Yes.
And we don't talk about death because mm-hmm. people get very, like, oh, I don't want to talk about death. It might happen. I'm going to break it to you. It's going to happen. Doesn't mean it's going to happen right now.
Yeah.
But I think that sometimes with haunted tourism, it's a way for us to talk about death in a more safe way, mm-hmm. like a disconnected way, because we're talking about other spirits, not our own spirit or not our own family members.
Right.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a couple things I wanted to go back to that you were saying. One of them was when you were talking about the Civil War and everything, and that's when spirituality really became big.
Yes.
And talking boards and trying to communicate with those that they lost, because they lost so many people and they were just never able to say goodbye.
Right.
And so they really had that like desire to reach out.
They had that desire to reach out because it was the largest mass casualty we had seen in our nation's history up to that point.
Yeah.
It has only since been rivaled with the pandemic, mm-hmm. right? And so people were looking towards, you know, when for them, like maybe church wasn't giving them an answer, but for many people, like they'd go to church and then they'd also have a seance, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't quite this kind of separation that we see in a lot of spaces today.
Yeah.
And I think one of the fascinating things about spiritualism from a historian's perspective and also a female perspective, it was a very female-led movement, right? Mm-hmm. And so women were a lot of the leaders in that space and continue to be in the spaces now. And while I think sometimes people think spiritualism has like gone away or it's just novelty, we still have spiritualist communities in the United States, like Lilydale.
Yes.
And then there are spiritualist churches, like Santa Barbara has a spiritualist church.
Mm-hmm.
You can go online or in person and like listen to their messages that they're channeling from folks that have gone on. So it didn't start and end there, and people are like, oh, Fox Sisters, or oh, you know, all these things were debunked. But not all of them were necessarily debunked. And there were definitely a lot of fraudsters,
right.
for sure.
Yeah.
But it was a great comfort to people. It mm-hmm. was a way to make people feel better or their loved one was at peace. Because if you had a very set, you know, standard of what a good death was, which also included, besides the proper burial, dying clear of conscious and ready to meet your maker, how do you guarantee that if you're not there with your loved one on the deathbed, right?
Right.
Like, so there are these aspects about it that I think people were trying to find that peace mm-hmm. because there were so many unknowns. And so it's not a surprise to me that we're kind of seeing a return to that after we've come through so many unknowns in the past couple years.
Yeah, it's funny. I was going to talk about that too, because the Victorians really embraced it. Then I feel like it was taboo for a while. I mean, even back in the 90s, when I was trying to do investigations before there was equipment or the TV shows or anything like that,
yeah.
people were like, what? And like,
yeah.
or when I had my first experience and people were like, they just didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to talk about it. Maybe you need to see a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
I don't know, but
yeah.
like, this is weird. And now I feel like it's becoming more, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's mainstream, but it almost,
but acceptable?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like definitely when I mention to people, like the two things, if I mention them to people, that suddenly people will talk, they've got a story, is the work I do around death and the work I do around the paranormal. And so I think that because people have had these really profound experiences that they don't have explanations for, or they can't think their way around, it's just like, oh my gosh, you've had something too. Let me share this with you, right?
Yeah.
And so, and it's interesting because being also in an academic space, I have to really pick and choose who I talk to.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very like, yeah, I do haunted tours.
Yeah.
And then, but then if people are, oh, well, have you had experiences? And it's like, we have had experiences. So kind of that, you know, testing the waters a little bit about mm-hmm. where people are. But I think still, I had somebody come on the tour who, they were very nice to younger men, but at the end of the tour were trying to convert me and talk to me, you know, they felt really strongly about their religious beliefs and I was very kind with them and, you know, listened to them. But at the same time, it's like, there is still that very like, oh, if you, you know, are godly or if you believe these things or whatever, it's like, and you know, that's not what we do at Haunted OC. Like, we're here providing great, you know, historical haunted
yeah.
entertainment. But people still do have really strong feelings about that and get back up sometimes, yes. For sure. But I absolutely know when people are like, you're into ghosts? I'm into ghosts.
Yeah. Oh, I have an uncle who's like, I don't believe in any of that stuff. Yeah. So don't even talk to me about it.
Yeah.
And he's very religious.
And you're like, but I do this. Are you? Okay.
Yeah exactly. Another thing I was going to say that you were talking about is spiritualism being very female led.
Yeah.
And I just think I've always thought about that. It is very female led, but you wouldn't know it if you looked at our media, because most of the TV shows, podcasts, anything to do with ghosts and the paranormal is very male-led.
Very male-centric.
But it's not the way it really is.
It's true. And I think that...
They agree.
You. Thank you, Helen. I think I have a lot of theories on that, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I'm not a big what I call brost hunter, which is like a come at me ghost. Like yeah. I'm not trying to go into a space and like yell at a spirit.
Right.
Because I wouldn't want anyone coming into my house and yelling at me, especially after I passed. But, you know, I think that has been the face for so long. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if people have assumptions that as, you know, women or female presenting folks, like we don't want to go into spaces and do that. Like anytime, let's go. But at the same time, I want to see more representation. I mm-hmm. want to see, because I know that there are women doing this.
Yeah.
Like we're women doing this, yes. right? And I know that there are other folks out there and other groups and other people that don't get the right representation out there also doing these things. Mm-hmm. Because it's not all, you know, men in tactical pants and tactical vests, like, you know, yelling at things in the dark. But it's not something that we see, right? But again, I think this is also a larger conversation about the media landscape.
Right.
Because who's being represented, whose voices are being put to the forefront, and what that then says about who can be in those spaces.
Right.
And that it representation matters. Representation matters for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've been trying to pitch a paranormal show for the longest time, and they straight up told me that I'm too Scooby-Doo and that female-led paranormal doesn't sell. That's what they told me. That's what the networks are saying.
Yeah, and that, sadly, that doesn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. And even when you see, because there have been some female shows that have happened, but then they don't last, or you have someone who, like, there's always a male presence there. There's mm-hmm. always has to be that male presence there.
Yeah.
But again, that I'm interested with the folks that are making those decisions, Do the folks, are the folks that are making those decisions look like the folks they want to put forward on TV? Because we go towards what we know, right?
Yeah.
And, I also think too, it's like, you know, you and I were chatting a little bit before about like, why are you doing this? Do you do this because you're excited about the paranormal and you're fascinated by these things, which you and I both are, and many mm-hmm. people we know are.
Yeah.
Or are you there for ratings, right? Mm-hmm. Do you want to be, because I've definitely encountered folks that like this becomes a paycheck for them. It's not about what they're really into. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah.
I don't know. I'm glad about the people that are like, but we need more people in more spaces doing this work, and they need to give it a shot.
Definitely. One of the other things I wanted to go back to is you were talking about the postmortem photographs.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated with those.
Yes.
But it's so interesting. I don't know if the listeners know, but like they used to actually pose them like they were still living.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's really hard to tell.
It can be. So the largest collection of postmortem photography you can find is the Thanatos Archives. You can get like a really reasonably priced subscription to be able to look in their archives, and they will post a lot on social media about like postmortem photography or not.
Yeah.
And again, that posing, and what we, one of the things with, especially with children, is the concept of the hidden mother. And that's where you can kind of, you wouldn't necessarily look at this part first, but you would see the child and then standing behind them, shrouded in like a black cloth, is the mother kind of propping them up.
Oh.
And so it's like this idea of the hidden mother kind of there. Some look very postmortem, and others it can be really hard to tell. But again, when it was taken, the kind of thing that they died from, mm-hmm. right? Because if you're dying from something that's like wasting you away or yeah. causing disfigurement, but some people it's like, I don't know if you are or not.
Yeah.
And it, again, it was a very, it's still a sentimental thing. Like I think I am also fascinated by postmortem mm-hmm. photography. But yeah, you're right. It can be really hard to tell sometimes.
Yeah. And I just think it's interesting that they posed them. Like it wasn't just I've seen photos of people just like in a coffin
right.
too, but a lot of times they're posed like they're still living.
Yeah. Like, oh, just here I am sitting in my chair. And
yeah.
you're like, oh, they're not alive? Okay.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about this house too is usually when I go somewhere and it's haunted, I feel like a heavy pressure on my chest. And this house, I didn't feel that way, but I'm getting a different symptom here.
Okay.
Super dizzy.
I get dizzy in the house too. That is a common thing.
Like I feel really, really dizzy. And when I turn and look over here, I'm like, whoa. When I turn back around, I'm like, whoa, I'm so dizzy. But I'm like, why am I so dizzy?
And that might just be things coming about with us. Like one of the things that I make sure, because sometimes we use air fresheners in here. We don't have any of those plugged in right now. Like I double check because I get real sensitive to mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
But the dizziness is also a common thing people have talked about. They'll be like, I need to step outside for a second.
And yeah.
Like the air is on in here. Like it's not overwhelmingly warm, but that does happen.
All right. I have some just fun roundup questions for you. Favorite scary movie?
Oh my gosh. Give me a moment on this one. I think my favorite, like we're talking about like a horror movie, I'm gonna go with like the original Hellraiser.
Okay.
I love the Cenobites and the, like it's like, I would say Hellraiser.
Okay. Scariest place you've ever been, paranormal wise.
Ooh. That's a really good question. I don't know that it's scary in a sense of like, oh, I can't be in here for sure. Because there are definitely some places in Bobby Mackey's where I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
But probably most intense to be able to sit in is investigating in one of the mines in Tombstone.
Oh.
Lights out. Because it is so silent, so dark and so still
mm-hmm.
that took me a little while to be like, you're gonna be fine.
Yeah.
There are people here.
Yeah.
So that I think was really, really intense. Really intense. Not scary, but intense.
Yeah, I took my mom to that too, and she was like, I don't know about this. favorite paranormal tool besides yourself?
Ooh. There's so many I love so much. I think really I've been really enjoying lately.
I'm loving the bell.
Right? And then I also think what we use when we do Golden State ones is the music box, which mm-hmm. shoots out like a laser.
Yes.
And it can go like 50 feet. And I think I like that piece because we don't have to sit with it mm-hmm. all the time. It can just be, you know, around. But I also just love like a good old fashioned tape recorder.
Yeah.
Like an actual tape recorder. The digital recorders are great, but tape is a little bit different.
Oh,
and so
you
pairing
use actual
like
tape.
An actual tape can be great.
Yeah, mini cassettes or regular cassettes?
Depends on which one's working that day.
Oh, okay.
I have both.
Okay. What's your favorite spooky book?
My favorite spooky book. I think that if we're looking from a fiction standpoint, it's hard to go wrong with anything by Edgar Allan Poe.
Okay.
Like I've been reading Poe since I was like in fourth grade.
Yeah.
It's really early, so I think like some classics around Poe for sure.
Okay. Number one haunted location on your bucket list.
This is so hard. there's so many. And I'm willing to go so many places. But I think one of the first places that comes back is I'd really like to go back into the UK and places in England and in Scotland.
Yeah.
And really explore, especially in Edinburgh. They have some, there's some stories about some of the haunted stuff there. I would really like to go back and do some like full bore investigations.
Yeah.
That is not to say that if anyone wants to invite me a place, I will not come. But I think some of those those older places, because what is old to us in the U.S. is like other countries are like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good for you and your 100-year-old building.
Yeah, they're like, that's a brand new house.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I would love to go over there too. And my bucket list is so long and it changes all the time. Like I learn about a new place and I'm like, oh, then that's my number one place now.
That's on the list now. Maybe we'll move this around.
Yeah.
And I think also too, because a mutual friend of ours has been doing a lot. I want to do a lot of the Civil War stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah.
The battlefields and just like, are we haunted by spirits? Are we haunted by trauma? Is it both?
Yeah.
Like I think that that would be fascinating as well.
Yeah. Have you been to Gettysburg?
No.
Yeah. I haven't done an investigation there, but I've been there. But so many people, they have their core story from there.
Yeah.
Like that was their first experience.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, oh, this changed the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so many people see like full-bodied apparitions there.
A lot of full-body apparitions. And then just like the sounds that they're hearing, like cannon fire, bullets, all these things where you're like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's fascinating. Well, thank you so much for doing this today, telling us all about the Kellogg House. I'm excited for our tour that we're about to do. I want for you to tell everybody like how they can book tickets,
absolutely.
Like how they can follow you if you want that, like all of that kind of stuff.
That'd be great. I love interacting with folks online and social media because then we get stories. But first of all, if you want to book tickets for Haunted OC, my unofficial tagline for Haunted OC is that every season is spooky season here at Haunted OC. And so if they go to hauntedoc.com and look under ghost walks, they will see all of our available ghost walks for any given month. And usually the dates are up a month and a half. Thank you. ahead of time. And so if they want to come and tour with me here in the Kellogg, look for the Kellogg House. I'll also, like I said, be picking up downtown Santa Ana. And then if they want to find me on the socials, Instagram or Twitter, AKA X, I'm at Darcy Staniforth. And then on TikTok, I'm Miss Darcy Staniforth. So if you have a private account and I don't, it's a weird thing, just send me a message and say, hey, I saw you on Ghost Bunny. And like, I wanted to follow you and I will follow back because I love interacting with folks because we get to build this community even more.
Awesome. And if you guys want to see the tour of the house, that will be on the Ghost Bunny Podcast YouTube page. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Ghost Bunny Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me on my spooky adventures. And I look forward to sharing a new ghost story with you each week. Please subscribe to our podcast so you're always the first to know when a new episode is out. And follow us on social media at Ghost Bunny Podcast on Instagram. And that'll be for photos and sneak peeks. And at Ghost Bunny Podcast on YouTube for the video version of the podcast. For spooky tours, investigations, and much more content. Bye, guys.
Oh, see that? That was weird. See that? What was that?
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.